Remember, Katrina, you must call me Doctor.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
And their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS will be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly bit?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out.
And it seems on a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
How old are you?
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Great eyes are cool.
It's a fez. I wear a fez now. Fezzes are cool.
The first question. The question that must never be answered. The oldest question in the universe. In plain sight.
Yes, but what is the question?
It's the same story every time, and it always begins with the same two words.
What two words?
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who?
Doctor
Who? Oh, Doctor Who?
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 If we knew his name, we might have a clue to all this.
Yes, we are back, journeying from the center of the TARDIS blend, back to you at geeksofdoom.com. My name is Greg Davies.
And I'm Tom Cheridor, journeying for the journey any way you want it. That's the way you need it.
First thing off the bat, okay, I need to say this because I'm a heavy metal head. Absolutely astoundingly wonderful to hear the Cult. In a Doctor Who episode. I'm not sure if there's any significance to the selection of the song, too, because it was Fire Woman.
I think they're on a roll, you know. They're just... they want to get in some classics, you know.
Well...
Last couple episodes.
Yeah, they're throwing a few songs in there this season.
It's all going to appear in Sounds of the TARDIS, Volume 1.
The Broadway musical.
Yes, I like to think that it's directors playing a music playlist just for me.
Well, Tom, I have a bunch of spoiler-ish material that I'm going to reserve for the end of the show.
Awesome,
regarding
dude,
the,
and that's the TARDIS bell behind you. Greg actually flies around in a magic vacuum that is got a chameleon circuit that's broken. It's really difficult to get into, but it makes that chime.
Yeah, because vacuum? It's a grandfather clock. So, I got some spoilers for you, but I'm going to save them for the end of the show because they're mainly related to the series finale and the 50th anniversary. Yes. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. And of course, that is also a nice reminder to our friends and listeners out there that we do talk spoilers here on the TARDIS Blend, and that if you haven't seen this episode of Doctor Who yet and you wish to remain unspoiled, go and check out the episode and then come back and listen to us. But Tom, I'm going to hand it over to you first because the last couple of episodes I've jumped right off the bat and given my opinions and everything, so... Why don't you kick it off? What were you? How did this one digest with you this week? What did you like? What did you hate? And then wrap it up with your rating.
Well, let's say that this was the first Doctor Who episode I would recommend to someone who is a casual fan because it was just amazing. It was everything that Doctor Who should have been, and everything that Doctor Who I was expecting Doctor Who to be this entire season, and don't really, except for a couple episodes in the first half of the season, don't really feel like they've hit. So I've been really happy with what I've seen thus far.
Mm-hmm.
We gonna do ratings?
We can, yeah.
I'm gonna give this one a 4 out of 5, which is the highest I've given a episode.
This series, yeah.
The series.
I'm matching you this week. I gave it a 4.2. Yeah, and the reason I mean, when I first watched it the first time through, I only gave it a, like a 2 or a 3, I think, you know, when I was watching it.
Really?
Because it's so laden with time loopy details that are very easy for casual viewers to miss in this episode, because there's a lot of stuff that happens at the end that impacts the start, and there's a lot of stuff that happens at the start that impacts the end, and it's all timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, and it is a little confusing to some people. But subsequent viewing, though, I've noticed, and I've watched it 3 times since it aired.
Oh, nice.
And I have to say that it gets much, much better on subsequent reviewings. It's one of those episodes you can keep coming back to, kind of like Blink, except Blink had an immediate impact, but you can always go back and sit down and watch Blink, you know? You can always go back and watch those you know, classic episodes. And I think this is going to become one of those as time goes on. I think time is going to be very good to this particular episode, pardon the pun, and which was not intended, by the way. So I think, I gave it a 4 out of 5. I thought the sets were pretty good.
They had the freaking library from the movie, as you said.
Well, you know, it there's some variations in there. And the library in the movie, it looks a lot smaller than the one in this episode. But they did have a lot of things there.
They had the smoking whatever, this and that, and books.
They had lots of books, including the one that was...
she knows the doctor's name.
Well, she doesn't anymore.
She doesn't remember it,
but... the biggest criticism... There were 2 big criticisms I had about this episode. Let me get the bad stuff off the bat. I thought the casting for the... Salvage guys was okay, except for the big tall doofus guy.
Yeah, you know, he was not been there at all, and I would have been fine with.
Yeah, he really didn't have an impact to me at all, and it just felt a little overcrowded. I think his performance also felt off. And then the other thing that was interesting about that, or rather, my criticism about that particular episode is that I think this is one of those episodes that probably would have worked better as a 2-parter. You know?
Perhaps.
I think there's a lot more. They could have really used that real estate of 2 episodes to really flesh out other areas of the TARDIS that we had never seen before.
I don't think that they really wanted to give that big of a look, because it's not a sustainable thing that can keep continually coming back.
No, but that's the point. That's the point. I mean, even the Doctor says at the beginning of the episode that, you know, picture the biggest ship you've ever seen. Now forget it, because this is infinite. And, yeah. I mean, that answers it right off the bat. There really is no way you can map a TARDIS, so to speak. It's just that it's an infinite dimension within the confines of that blue police box. And within the confines of that police box, anything can happen. Anything can be rearranged. Anything can be moved and relocated or jettisoned or whatever. You know, there's so much that can be done with that. And I really think that they could have explored that a little more. So, for example, the first parter could have been the whole "Let's find Clara," and then the second parter could have been the whole engine thing, and that would have given them a lot more real estate space, not only to explore other areas of the TARDIS, but also give a little bit more airtime to those new characters that showed up as a salvaging.
I don't disagree with you there, but I think there was a lot of good here. I mean, they did some sciencey stuff in the background. Mm-hmm. you know, they showed, you know, a behavior about the TARDIS that was plausible given what we know of the TARDIS, but also gave it a lot more character that we had never seen before. And, you know, we got to see in the TARDIS, you know, the Moffat saying it was so disappointing when he got in and that's all it was a swimming pool. Well, they had a swimming pool, but they also had tons of other things.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool. And, you know, most importantly, it pushed the story ahead, at least a little bit. Like, yeah. The Doctor really still does not know who the hell Clara is.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? Because that kind of verifies my theory about Clara, that she is the Clara. She's the original. She's the original Clara. And that the Doctor, having found her, is taking her on these journeys and is inadvertently leading her to what's going to cause her to be split across time.
Yeah, but that would be a paradox.
Paradoxes resolve themselves, largely, in the words of the Doctor.
Yeah, not this one.
No, not necessarily, because it's not, if you split Clara, if there's some mannerism in which Clara can be split across time in different instances, she's got different identities. Like, if you think about it, the first Clara was Clara Oswin Oswald. Oswin Oswald. It wasn't Clara. Her name was Oswin Oswald. The second Clara was Clara Oswin Oswald, and this one is just Clara Oswald. So they got three different names. And there's, you know, I'm absolutely dead certain that's where they're going. I think this is the verification that we were waiting for, and that I was on the money as far as her being the original definite article, if you will. The original Clara.
Yeah.
That's where I'm thinking. Some other good stuff. Now, a lot of people kind of get confused with the whole Deus Ex Machina and, you know, the big friendly button thing, right? Because it's a reset button, essentially, for the plot. But that was actually, like, a really nice tip of the hat to the first episode of Doctor Who ever that was set entirely in the TARDIS, and that was The Edge of Destruction. They'd used a reset button on that, and I'll send you the photo of this in the chat so that you can see it, Tom. I'm going to have this link in the show notes so people can see it. It's a screenshot from The Edge of Destruction from back in the day. And when they filmed this, they had accidentally left the actor's notes on the rehearsal panel of the TARDIS console. And they had, like, you know, reverse switch and other things written on there. And, you know, Carol Ann Ford, I think, who played Susan, was the one that scratched it out and wrote Big Friendly Button on there. And it got caught on camera, and so it was immortalized as a part of Doctor Who history by accident. And so they've actually incorporated that concept, Big Friendly Button, into this episode, which is kind of a little meta in a way, but it's just a nice little nod to that original you know, series that was really cool. Lots of previous episode references in this episode. The first the big one that's got fans, the hardcore fans, tearing their hair out is the Eye of Harmony, which, you know, looked like a gigantic sun in the TARDIS. When we saw that, but the fans are tearing their hair out because over the years, there's been so many different definitions and explanations for what the Eye of Harmony is and how it works and what it's supposed to do, that it's all, like, the continuity is just in shatters. And so now Moffat's added something else to the barrel. And, you know, it's they're tearing their hair out about that. But I think that's the whole point of the Eye of Harmony. What else did we see? We saw the Doctor's crib.
Dude. We're glossing over a big, huge detail that could pop up later and lead to Paul McGann. Maybe not Paul McGann, but it was in the library, so maybe. She knows the Doctor's name, and he said secrets keep people alive. Secrets save everyone. And she has to forget. She has to forget his name. Why is this important? That's a big clue.
I agree with you, and that will key into the spoilers that that I'm going to come back to in a bit.
Let's just jump into the spoilers.
Well, no, I want to talk, just before we do that, I want to talk about the other bits and pieces that we saw in the TARDIS that reference the older episodes. We saw the Seventh Doctor's umbrella. The other thing that we saw was the model of the TARDIS that little Amelia Pond made. The magnifying glass that was used often by Tom Baker was in there, and
cradle.
The crib was in there. That's right. And the big doozy, the gigantic one, which has never been seen before up until now, and that was the book which detailed the history of the Time War.
They did. They had tons of time Time Lord stuff.
Yeah. And, well, the other thing,
music, that, culture,
dude. I love the liquefied encyclopedia.
Oh, that was amazing. And
that was brilliant. It's just total. That was like something out of, you know, that's total Doctor Who right there, dude. Totally Doctor Who right there.
That was the Doctor's garage, by the way. No, that was the library.
No, he does a whole bunch of things in different places, yeah.
When they were in the garage. But I like that they saw it. We saw the garage. We saw the swimming pool. We saw the peak of nothingness out into a giant river.
Yeah. Hey, did you notice the other thing that was really weird as well? The observatory that she passed by?
I love that.
Did you notice that the telescope thingy is the same one that... No, listen to me. That's the technical term, telescope thingy. Did you notice that that was the same device that was used in the Queen Victoria episode with the wolves?
I did not.
Yes. So I don't know whether it's a replica or whether, you know, maybe the Doctor went and obtained it at some stage and put it in the TARDIS or something along those lines. I have no idea, but one thing in particular, it does leave a little open space for writing further down the line, and not necessarily even during Stephen Moffat's era. I mean, down the line, you know, whoever the next showrunner is might want to pick that up and run with it. As a potential story of some kind, but the Time War book was fascinating because there's really only two people that I can think of that could be responsible for writing that book, and the first is obviously the Doctor because he's the last surviving Time Lord, and the second would be Riversong, being that she's an archaeologist, a scientist, you know, historian. She could possibly have written that as well. So I think that's also a big clue that was placed there as well, because I think it's going to key into later in the season, particularly with the season finale. So spoilers, how spoiled do you want to be? That's the question. If you don't want to be spoiled, you might want to turn away right now, because we had kind of touched on this a little in the previous episode. There were those photos of John Hurt circulating, and there were a lot of fans speculating that he was a doctor of some kind. Well, now multiple reports from so-called insiders have been released indicating that, yes, he is indeed a doctor. And Stephen Moffat went on to say that the season finale for this particular series is going to change the show forever. And so there's a lot of insiders that are pointing to the fact that John Hurt is going to be appearing at the end of the season finale, as will David Tennant and Billy Piper, and that it will be revealed that Matt Smith is not the 11th Doctor. He is, in fact, the 12th, and that John Hurt is playing a previously unknown 9th or earlier Doctor of some kind.
No.
That's the word, dude. I'm just reporting this back to you from what I've read. So, you know, that's what they're saying. And the other thing is that, yes, the season finale will focus on Trenzlore. And the name of the Doctor, obviously. And so it's all coming to a head. That whole Doctor Who thing, finally, is coming to a conclusion. So that's
my part. But I just don't see that. I honestly feel like that he's going to come back as someone from the Time War.
That's possible. You know, I'm just reporting this. I'm not saying that this is legit.
That would just be so lame.
It depends how carefully they play with it and how carefully they run with it.
He's not going to stick around long enough to get to know him, and I feel like you've just wasted an entire Doctor personality.
Well, let's say, for example, that the Doctor, if, say, John Hurt is indeed the Ninth Doctor and Matt the 12th, then that could explain a lot of things. You know, he would be a Doctor who was in existence during the Time War, and he could be a very, very different, violent Doctor based upon what had to happen during the Time War. So there could be a little bit of explanation in there. I mean, and John Hurt plays excellent villains too, by the way. He would be a great, like, nemesis. So I don't know whether they're going to go with that or not. I have no clue. I can see to a degree that this would be something that Stephen Moffat would pull. You know, and he is saying that this is the conclusion to this series is going to change the show forever. And so this would be that kind of revelation that would change the show pretty much forever. So I don't know.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting. I thought next episode was going to be Cybermen. It is
no,
not.
That's after the next one. Next one is the Crimson Horror, and actually, I hadn't seen very much of this until the preview was played at the end of the episode, and that preview, I'm now a little bit more excited for this one because, you know, we get to see Vastra and Jenny and Strax again. Yes. Who are also apparently going to be in the season finale as well. So it should be interesting to see where that goes. And so where are we on Series 7? I guess we should have a look at that as well. Series 7, just looking at the TARDIS data core here. So that we know where we're going at, because you know the split season has really thrown me completely. I'm kind of lost now where we're at. Okay, so this is kind of like we're in the middle now, and we're on to the last three. So next week's is the Crimson Horror, written by Mark Gatiss. Now he did an excellent one with Cold War, with the Ice Warriors returning. And after that is Neil Gaiman's Nightmare in Silver, which leads directly into the season finale, The Name of the Doctor.
Which is going to be hopefully worth it all.
Well, you know, I think it's going to lead directly into the 50th anniversary, and it wouldn't surprise me if Moffat pulls something ridiculous out of his head with regards to John Hurt. Because he has a tendency, you notice, like with the seasons that he has a tendency, okay, now this bit's resolved, but here's a clue to the next mystery. This is where we're going, you know? And so last year we resolved Riversong and the death of the Doctor. And when that finished, you know, Dorian's going on about the fields of Trenzlore and the name of the Doctor and the fall of the 11th, and everyone's like, what the hell is all this about? You know, in the end of Series 5, we kind of worked out what was going on with the exploding TARDIS and the cracks in time, but we didn't know what it was all about, and, like, it was, you know, silence will fall. We had no idea where they were going with that. And I really do think that whatever John Hurt is, whether he is the Doctor or a Time Lord or just a new nasty villain, I think he is going to tie in very into a key role by the conclusion of this season. That's going to lead us directly into the 50th.
Let's hope so.
So it should be fun.
That would be a nice treat.
Yeah, let me check some of my notes real quick, see if I missed anything here. No, I think we've covered everything here. We kind of got some clarification on the Clara stuff this week, and let's hope to see if we have a little more revelations come up over the next couple of weeks. Oh, now, there's another rumor going around that's a little strange, Tom. Maybe you could do some digging on this through the week and we can get some answers on this. But do you remember the Christmas special, right, with the snowmen?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember Jenna Louise Coleman played the governess?
Yes.
Out there, right? And she was looking after those two kids?
Yes.
Those two kids are apparently in the Cyberman episode.
What?
So, well, that's the rumor going around. I haven't seen any cast lists or anything. I was reading about this on the weekend at Gallifrey Base, but I couldn't find...
Wait, the kids are or the grown-up kids?
Yeah, the kids. No, not the grown-up kids. The actual kids themselves. They're playing return roles somehow in this Cyberman episode with Neil Gaiman.
That is very strange.
It is weird. So if you come across anything, you know, save it for the show and we'll dissect it next week. But that's all I got. Doctor Who classic recommendations. You got any recommendations this week?
Go watch some Tom Baker.
Yeah, good one. That's it. Specifically, The Invasion of Time was the Tom Baker one that went deeper into the TARDIS, if anyone's interested. I've got a list of the TARDIS episodes here and there, so I'll run through these and you guys can check them out. The Edge of Destruction, which is the First Doctor. First season, third episode, straight after the Daleks. It's one of my favorites. It's only two episodes. It's like 45 minutes. Give it a look because it's not bad at all. Logopolis and Castrovalva have a lot of TARDIS stuff in there. A little bit in the Twin Dilemma from Colin Baker. And, of course, we saw a bit more in the Christmas Invasion with David Tennant. And who can forget Neil Gaiman's opus, The Doctor's Wife, which really should be at the top of the recommendations list, I think. Absolutely fabulous episode. So, yeah, check them out. And that's it for this week. 8 out of 10 was our collective rating, I guess you could say, for the journey to the center of the TARDIS. Excellent episode. These episodes seem to be getting better as we go along through this season. So having said that, let's keep our fingers crossed, Tom, and see how things go.
Yes, journey on out.
And I'm Greg.
I'm Tom Cheridar.
We'll catch you next time. This is the TARDIS Blend, geeksofdoom.com. I'm going to play something real quick from the episode. This is going to be like one of those cameo Easter eggs at the end of the podcast. This was one thing I really liked from the episode. This is the first when the big dude from the salvages is trying to take apart the console. And just listen carefully to all of the past nods in here. This is brilliant. Okay, so that's a short sample of that, and I really liked it. I wanted to include it at least at the end. We'll catch you guys next week. Bye.